You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome into a Saturday afternoon edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I have a very frustrated Josh Bass next to me because we are recording for the second time. I think we just did, and I know it's easy to say now that it doesn't exist anymore, maybe our best podcast ever. It was so smooth. Everything went right. And of course, I turn it off. I go to look. We recorded the first 2 minutes of it.
Yeah, we just did a one-hour podcast with Adrian Wojnarowski. He had to leave, and now we're on the second take. Now that we lost the first one, we're without Woj, so yeah. It's just going to be us two now.
All right, yeah, so we're going to do something very spiteful. We're going to shortchange you guys slightly because of our own mistakes, so we're just going to do a 15-minute micropod.
But we do have a special guest coming, hopefully in the next week, so that will make it up to you guys.
And then we'll tease that later in the pod. This is the tease for the tease. All right, but I think we can make it up to them by being extra sharp in our delivery and points. All right, so the Nets fall to the Blazers in a close one, 127-125. The culprit, turnovers down the stretch. Nets up by six within the final 3 minutes, and then Caris LeVert turns it over, speeding down the court. He turns it over after getting a big rebound, and he just kind of turned. He tried to ditch basically CJ McCollum, and then went right into Jusuf Nurkić, who took it away from him, finished with an and one. And then Jared Allen also struggling to hold the ball down the stretch when Dinwiddie kept finding him on a little give and goes.
Yeah, Allen shows inexperience in the pick and roll down the stretch. It's good that he gets these reps, but at the same time, I think Trevor Booker could have been in there, to be honest. But yeah, Allen just getting stripped late really was unable to help the Nets score, and their offense kind of bogged down, and that allowed the Blazers to get some easy buckets. And you can say that some of the and ones they got were a little bit soft, but listen, the refs gave them the calls, so at the end of the day, you can't really complain about that. But the Nets didn't execute down the stretch. Should Joe Harris have been in there? That's possible. I was a little bit frustrated with Kenny Atkinson's rotations throughout the game, because RHJ also played a lot of minutes at the five against Nurkić in the second quarter, and Nurk just ate him up, and that really shrunk the Nets' lead from, I think it was like 8 to 10 for most of the second quarter, down to 1 or 2 at the half. So I think that when you have so many options at center, Zeller, Booker, Jared Allen, there's no way RHJ should be playing the five, especially against a banger like Big Nurk.
Yeah, and we talked about this in round one, and again, I might just have a bias because I love Joe Harris, but again, he was playing really, really well, 13 points, 5 assists in 20 minutes, middle of the fourth quarter, hits back-to-back threes, then they switch on him, he throws a beautiful assist to Trevor Booker off that switch, and then he gets taken out of the game, and he just doesn't come back in, and I'm a big proponent of both Booker playing over Allen in crunch time, and Harris playing over the other Allen Crabbe in crunch time, just because I think he makes smarter decisions with the basketball, and he's like, and this is surprising, but he's a little bit more of a versatile player than Allen Crabbe is. But it's kind of interesting, because it's like, do you play the guys that you're invested in, or do you play the better guys? Allen Crabbe, he has a big contract. Joe Harris, if he's not on the minimum, he's on very close to the minimum. Trevor Booker, again, a journeyman, a role player.
Happy birthday, Trevor.
Happy birthday, Trevor. well, I just tear you apart. In defense of him. Journeyman, a role player. But right now, a better player than Jared Allen, who's the first-round pick, who's probably maybe the second or third most valuable guy on the franchise right now.
Honestly, I think Trevor Booker's done a great job this year. Maybe Atkinson didn't want to play him too much because he was coming back from injury, but he's really stuck to what he's good at. Last year, there were a lot of times where he got the rebound and just took it coast to coast, and there was either a turnover or just a charge as he barreled right into someone like a bull in a china shop. But he's really focused on what he's good at this year, getting mismatches in the post and shooting that soft baby hook, which he's really good at, and being an energy guy. So he's been great this year for the Nets. I would have played him at the five, obviously. Going up against Nurkić is a huge size disadvantage, but Booker is strong enough to kind of hold his own and just make some tough plays that always contributes to the team winning. As far as Crabbe goes, he was terrific the four games prior to this one, averaging 18 points a game on 50% shooting from three. So I don't blame Atkinson for kind of having him out there, but at the same time, Harris was on fire, so you'd like to give Harris a quick break and then bring him back out there. That's something that we saw in the first Phoenix game where Dinwiddie led the Nets comeback, and then he took him out and then just didn't put him back in until about 2 or 3 minutes left, and that really cost the Nets a lot of momentum there. So it seems like Atkinson does have a problem with kind of taking guys out for a little bit and then just not really reinserting them when the momentum's slipping away. But I think that, you know, it's good for Allen to get these reps. And then Allen Crabbe, going up against his former team, maybe he was a little bit overzealous to make an impact, took 14 shots. I thought a lot of them were rushed, but he's been really good up until this point, the last few games. So although Harris had the hot hand, I can see why Crabb was inserted.
Yeah, I think Harris continues to be the more active player, but Crabb is trending in the right direction. He had one play that was like nearly Larry Bird-esque where he missed the shot and got around two guys to like nearly get the putback, but of course he missed a layup and it wasn't like as cool as a Larry Bird one because it was just a pretty basic layup.
There was one great Harris play also where he was bringing the ball down on a fast break, like 3-on-2 situation. Looked like he was going to pull up from three, gave a little hezzy, and then found a cutting Booker down the lane for an easy layup. And I think showing the maturity not to just gun that three up is a really important aspect of his game, that he always makes the right pass, and he's really someone that helps the offense run functionally and run smoothly.
Right, and again, that's like why at this point I'm a proponent of him over Crabb, but if Alan Crabb can catch up in that department, maybe his superior size.
I know you had a bet with Josh Lloyd that he was going to play – it wasn't going to play 100 minutes. Do you get an extra beer for each 100 minutes he plays?
So I think I should, because it's not like in
you'll have like 20 beers owed to you.
In Josh's defense, I didn't shout him down. Like I don't want to like front, like I was like, that's totally insane at the time, even though like I thought it was like kind of over the top. But I was also like, I don't think it's going to be like by much. Like, I don't think he'll really be a part of the rotation unless like Crabb gets hurt. But yeah, he's played a significantly larger role than any of us could have expected, scoring 17 points per 36 minutes on a relatively efficient clip. And now I don't want to front like Jared Allen was like bad this whole game, because even though he shot 3-10, he had a couple really nice finishes early on. I know you and me both kind of locked in on that play where he split Nurkic and Noah Vonleh to get a rebound and put it back up and in. And that was just like not a play he was making earlier in the season. And I think for big guys, when you have that level of activity, size, and athleticism and just really give a shit, like that, like there's like, it gives you like a baseline of competency that like could allow you and a guy with Allen's like frame and athletic talents, like an opportunity to stick in the league for a long time and make a lot of money.
Yeah, that play honestly was a little bit Porzingis-like, where he just kind of like drives right in and just plucks the ball away from two defenders using a long wingspan. So it's great to see Allen make that play. I thought in the first half he looked very comfortable catching the ball and finishing on the move. Second half struggled with his shot a little bit, 3 of 10 from the field. Not what you want from a big man, but he did a good job on the offensive boards, finished with 4 of those, good activity on defense, and his 7'6 wingspan does allow him to affect a lot of plays. And it's good that he gets these reps. I just wish that there's going to be a lot of time for the Nets to play him in March and April. And I think you should do whatever you can to get a win at this current junction of the season. So I would have liked to see Booker playing. But at the same time, I'm not going to fault Atkinson too much, because Allen is a big part of the Nets' future. And just seeing those flashes from him is a great sign.
And I can even defend like the logic is like just like a win the game move, just because Allen is even at this point like a much better rim protector than Trevor Booker. And like he's still I don't think he's like even come close to figuring out like how to use verticality and like how to alter shots like the way I think he'll eventually be able to. But just in terms of being able to switch on a pick and roll and being quick and being smart on defense, he's already almost there. And he did have like the one play like where he kind of like before LeVert got that rebound where I'm pretty sure he was the guy responsible for altering McCollum's shot. But yeah, he just couldn't make up for it on the offensive end in this one.
Yeah, I think especially when he's contesting shots, the Nets don't have a great rebounding team outside of him. So it allowed the other Blazers to kind of crash the glass, and especially when they're playing two big men, whether that was Nurkic at the 5 and then either Vonleh or Davis at the 4, it seemed like they had a huge offensive rebounding advantage. Also, I want to give props to Tyler Zeller. He had his first career three-pointer in the game against the Cavs. Solid job tonight, just so much better than Mozgov, because he can really catch on the move and finish, and that's a nice dimension to have for the Nets offense. So I was at a pregame last night for a concert I was going to, and someone asked if Tyler Zeller was still in the league, and a bunch of people were like, oh no. And I was like, Nets starting center, actually.
And you've told me the czar, Mike Fratello, wasn't present?
Yeah, the czar was not there.
Okay, he wasn't like telegraphing plays?
If he was, I didn't see him. I think, okay. I, think I would have noticed it.
Drawing on the wall. Yeah. Oh, no, that's the czar. Yeah, I thought, we mentioned this first time around, but I thought the one this game was just spectacular, where he was clearly drawing a giant man in Dallas. And Ian Eagle, for once in his life, was like, oh, I think I have this one. That is Dirk Nowitzki. And nope, it was LaMarcus Aldridge, who was born in Dallas.
Do you think that the czar won? Like, originally it's going to be Dirk Nowitzki, but then once Ian guessed it correctly, he wanted to switch to troll Ian?
I think you've just cut to the heart of the game. I think the whole game is troll Ian, kind of get his blood pressure going a little bit. All right, as we move on in this podcast, I wanted to preview what we have going ahead. We were talking about Nets, who low-key had good games. I want to mention Caris LeVert. I thought he was really, really good, and then we were going to quickly get into that Grizzlies game. Spoiler, both me and Josh are confident, and then we will wrap this one up. All right, yeah, let's talk LeVert. I thought he continued his trend over the last couple of games and kind of cut to the core of what we were both complaining about, and him not being aggressive enough and him not being confident enough, going 5 of 6 from the field, finishing with 14 points in 27 minutes. I think D'Lo being out is really helping him. And again, it was more of a LeVert issue than a D'Lo issue, but he just didn't totally seem confident when he couldn't be the guy with the ball, and he was kind of indecisive, and he was like, do I defer to D'Lo? Do I just attack? I know I can. Even when he'd have switches, sometimes he'd pass up on them. And this game, he was really, really good. Anytime a big guy went on him, he would kind of explode to the rim. And I think that's kind of an underrated part about losing a star player. Your bench guys suddenly get a lot more confidence and they start playing up to their potential.
Yeah, I think it seemed like everyone was kind of deferring to D'Lo because he is the chosen son. He's supposed to be the star guy, number 2 overall pick. And Dinwiddie took a lot of shots tonight, 20 shots, but they were all in the flow of the offense. And it seemed like everyone kind of moves a lot more smoothly and is empowered to do to take people off the dribble. I think LeVert had one great play where he just blew by his defender. I think it was Vonleh, had an easy layup at the basket because he saw there was no help once he beat his man. Obviously, the 4 turnovers is an issue, especially the 2 at the end, which seemed like he was just rushing. But it's good to see him have an efficient game from the field. And I thought that him and Kilpatrick did a nice job of making the Nets offense flow without Dinwiddie. So that's something that I was really worried about, because Dinwiddie can provide a reasonable facsimile of D'Angelo Russell and Jeremy Lin, but at the same time, when he's not there to steady the second unit, how is that going to work out? But they did a great job tonight of really getting guys involved. And as you mentioned, just taking advantage of switches. I've noticed a lot of times the Nets guards will, if they have a switch, they'll kind of look for the big man who has a smaller man guarding him. But at the same time, you don't really want Zeller and Quincy Acey posting up. I think it's a better job for the Nets guards to take the big man off the dribble, and there'll be offensive rebounding opportunities. So I don't know if Atkinson always wants the big to get involved when there's a switch, but you know what? Take your man off the dribble. Don't always look to the post. I think that's just going to come with more reps and more confidence for these guys.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Let's talk about that Grizzlies game quickly. I think we're both pretty confident the Grizzlies without Mike Conley, as you mentioned last time around, not one of the better rosters in the league. And as we keep saying, the Nets have played really, really well against their last 3 games against 2 teams that made the finals the last 3 seasons, and then a Portland team that is clearly really, really good, especially when Damian Lillard is shooting the way he was in this game and Jusuf Nurkić has his game going. I think if the Nets can keep up that shooting, they kind of have an athletic advantage at most of the spots on the court, and they could kind of run this Grizzlies team down. It's just that they're kind of due for a little bit of regression to the mean in terms of shooting the ball. I probably should have gotten the numbers together, but in this game alone, 50% from the field, 40% from the three-point line, missed 6 free throws. But they're really hitting right now, and if that goes back a little bit, this team could start looking really, really bad. That being said, this is a game I think they have to win, and I think they should win.
Yeah, it's going to kind of show if the Nets are going to be a 30-32 win team or a 24 win team. Grizzlies have lost, I think, 5 or 6 games in a row, and without Conley, their roster is pretty barren. Starting lineup of Gasol, Jamichael Green, who the Nets, I think, flirted with in free agency this year, Dylan Brooks, Handsome Chandler Parsons, and Mario Chalmers. So when you have Chandler Parsons in your lineup, obviously your lineup's going to be as handsome as possible. But at the same time, the Nets do have a talent advantage, especially from the 1 through 4 positions. I think they're going to take all their centers that on the roster and just kind of throw them at Gasol and see if anyone does a good job. But the Nets did beat Grizzlies last year when they had a much better team. That was kind of one of Jeremy Lin's return games and a signature win for the Nets. So hopefully that can continue this year. I think that Dinwiddie's going to have a good game against Chalmers, who's definitely lost a step or two from his Miami days, where he was known as a very good defensive player. And if Tyreke Evans can be held in check, because he's really their top scoring option on the perimeter at this point, I think the Nets will have a lot of success and should win this game.
All right. Before we finish up, Josh, we tease the tease. Now the tease. We're going to have a guest this week.
Yes, we will. We're coordinating this with Ben Nido of Basketball Insiders.
Raul's cousin.
Yeah. Formerly of the Brooklyn Game. If you're a Nets fan, you definitely know his work. Doesn't get to talk about the Nets as much this year. So we're excited to have him on the podcast. And hopefully he can connect us with our white whale, Devin Karpetian, the OG.
The legend.
Yeah. So Ben's a great guy, does great work on the Nets. So I'm interested to hear his takes on the team because he is now covering the league nationally. So we want to get his Nets insight and bring him back to his roots.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people grew up with that famous Vince Carter poster where he's thrown down, like, I think it was like a ridiculous windmill with like no one in the old New Jersey Nets arena. I grew up with a Carpentian poster.
Carpentian.
So I'm hoping with Neto in the background. So I'm hoping we can get that done. Josh, as we wrap this up, anything grinding your gears or everything's going well for you?
You know what? Everything's going well. I thought the noon start time yesterday was incredible.
That made you happy.
Yeah, because I could just wake up, do all my errands, watch the game. I was like, okay, Portland's going to be a little bit tired because it's 9 a.m. their time. Hopefully all their guys partied last night. I should have like gave a club promoter like all my life savings to be like, okay, make sure Lillard and McCollum just go ham and they're too hungover.
That's what Devin and D'Lo tried to do to each other. And then they both played well.
I know. I was telling people that night when Devin Booker went out for his 21st, I was like, and I saw D'Lo on Instagram. Someone was asking me about FanDuel advice. I said, stay away from Booker and D'Lo.
They both went off.
No, but that would have been great if then the Blazers just had to rely on Napier, Pat Connaughton, my boy Jake Lehman.
Yeah, you know, Connaughton and Lehman are locked on. They're getting some Chick-fil-A and then they're calling it.
No, we love you because Lehman goes hard. Recorded this episode twice just for you. We'll be back later this week with Ben Nato, like Tornado, but Ben, peace out.